Hey, welcome to the Afikra podcast. Today's episode is going to feature a community presentation from Alexandra Ivanova. This episode was originally filmed on Zoom on June 6, 2020, and is entitled What Makes Khaliji Rhythms Swing? I highly recommend that you check out the YouTube episode because it's a highly visual presentation, so you might enjoy a little more there.
Today we have Alexandra Ivanova, who's calling in from Austria and is going to share her presentation. The way this is going to play out, if you haven't been to previous Afikra Zoom events, is we're going to do a very quick 5-minute welcome to Afikra. And I'll explain a little bit about what Afikra is for those of you who are joining us for the first time. Then I'll hand it over to Alexandra, and she's going to do her presentation for about 20 minutes, and then we'll make sure to have a Q&A afterwards for about 10 minutes. Alexandra, are you ready?
Thank you, everyone. Thank you to Afikra for continuing the conversation in any form and shape. I'm really excited to do this talk again. And my topic is how come Khaliji rhythms swing? So what led me to this is playing jazz piano myself, also living in the UAE or having lived in the UAE and being curious about the region's musical traditions. I also traveled to Zanzibar, this is me on the right, and discovered kind of the region's history around slave trade. And beyond that, I witnessed the album release concert of the Yemeni's Peninsular album, where he mixes a lot of Khaliji rhythms with jazz. So here's a picture also of that concert. And what led me back to this talk also was last year's talk and a lot of people I met there. A lot of them became friends or people I worked with. And in the meanwhile, I had the luck or pleasure to travel to Cuba and start a little bit of percussion myself as well. So all of this led me back to doing this talk again. With this, I promise that I'm not an expert. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I know also that some of the topics are sensitive, have been sensitive, and are ever more so sensitive. So please interject. And I'm not trying to persuade you of my agenda or opinion. So my question is, what makes Khaliji rhythms swing? Now, we're going to talk about what is swing in general. Trying to understand where the swing feel in Khaliji music comes from, what it sounds like different examples, where it's played today, and how it relates to other swing-based music, or how it can be mixed. In general, there's a whole lot of flurry of how you can feel rhythms, and they can be clubbed in general, oversimplified, into straight and swing. So the straight feel of playing something, and here you have my imaginary drum that I discovered this morning. Straight feel would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So every beat is exactly as long and as important as the next beat. You can club it in 4, club it in 5, club it in 6, doesn't matter. Every beat is like just sliced about the same. In swing phrasing, you basically delay the second note and make it shorter. So the first one is longer. It comes like the, it's like a galop kind of feel. Last year I talked a lot about the fact that both these things will be written in the same way. In the meanwhile, I kind of understood that it doesn't really matter how it's written for Khaliji music or Khaliji rhythms, because actually, they were not written, or it's an oral tradition, unlike Western tradition. So I'm not going to over-obsess about how it's written, but the point is, what is going to change is what is up here, Khaliji swing. That's how you're going to phrase it. And if you were to write it, it's going to be written this way, but it's going to be played in a different way if the rhythmic feel is different. Now, why is this different for Khaliji music? If you look at, for instance, I'm going to play an example of Egyptian baladi rhythm. So it's very straight in the phrasing. Similar, I'm actually going to skip the dapke, just because I have so much things I want to tell you in so little time. But basically both in Egypt and the Levant, the rhythms are phrased in a straight way. Unlike in the Gulf. So here's an example of a Khaliji song. It's called Chil Sota by Badawi Zubair. So the drum isn't very loud, but you can hear. So it's got a very distinct, like, draggy, swingy feel to it. And, well, why is that? There's a lot of different theories, or maybe two main theories. And one I came across is actually comparing the feel of the rhythmic playing to the way that the body of a camel moves, where there's actually been experiments that record the feet and the body of the camel moving, and that creates a polyrhythm. So two rhythms at the same time, where the feet come first and the body comes after. And this has like a similar draggy feeling. Now, surely the way and, you know, the natural surroundings have influenced the way people have played music. But first of all, the Khalij is not only desert. And second of all, there's a lot of different styles that have this swing. Also, some of the like seafaring music or things played outside of the desert. So basically, right. So basically, I tried to dig further into the roots of the swing phrasing, and swing is basically rooted in a 3/2 polyrhythm. I don't know in how much depth to go here, because I also don't know how many of you are musicians, how many of you are familiar with notation, but basically the thing is 1, 2, 3 and 1, 2, which together makes 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1. So I'm going to show an example afterwards, but basically, if in the 3, 1, 2, 3, you leave out the second one, 1, 3, 1, kick up, you get this swing phrasing or feeling. And the most complex polyrhythms are found in West African and Indian Carnatic music. Also, most of the sub-Saharan musical styles are based on polyrhythms, and they have a strong hypnotic character. So I have a brief example of like 3/2 in a polyrhythm. And now where you get the swing. Right. Okay. Now, how did all of this come to the Gulf? Of course, the trade links between Africa and the Gulf go back as far as I found the Middle Ages. Now, the Gulf and Africa have historically been linked by trade routes, by a large population that came through slavery. And I'm not sure if that is since the Middle Ages. This is as far as I read. And I'm not sure if it ever started or if it ever has been different. So I'm actually not sure where slavery starts or if it ever started or if it's always been like that is what I want to say. Eminent or important actors in that, regards were the Bufalasa tribe and the Baniyas tribe and British colonial powers in the Gulf at that time. And here, I mean, you can see, I mean, the routes on the right picture. And what I mostly want to talk about is when it all really kind of boomed, which was with the Omani conquests over Zanzibar in the 17th century and 1785 Hilwa, which is down here. Basically, Oman expanded as an empire, and so it was like a channel for getting a lot of labor from the African, East African coast up through Zanzibar, which is an island off the Tanzanian coast, through Oman into the Gulf. And this happened especially with industrialization and plagues like the cholera, produced kind of an increase in production and produce, which created a growing demand for labor all over the world, actually, not just in the Gulf, in Europe, in America, in the Gulf. And so in the Gulf, the roles for slaves were distinct, mainly for pearl diving and date harvesting on plantations, but also in a lot for the service sector. So they would work as concubines, cooks, porters, soldiers, for instance. And the interesting thing to note here is that in the Gulf, the ratio was one woman to two men, whereas elsewhere, it was actually two men to one woman. So I think the service sector was probably a sizable amount. And the source countries were, if you look at that map here, right, were Kenya, Tanzania, South Somalia, so mostly countries in East Africa. And the estimates say between 800,000 and 20 million people reached the Gulf as slaves over the 19th century. So this is a very, very big estimation, or span. Up until 1873, when the abolition law was officially adopted, and 4 years later when it was really actually enforced by the military. I think a note here to say is that it's important to always think about who writes history and what types of slavery have ended. I guess that definitely one type of slavery ended here, but I believe a lot of different forms still persist. And the interesting thing to think about, so here I have a picture of Tipu Tip in Zanzibar, who was like a main slave trader, is that it's not, how can I say that correctly? I think race was not a limit to slavery, in the sense that Tipu Tip was a main slave trader on that side, and slavery was a lucrative business. So you would have people who work as slaves, some of them might get spoken free or get their freedom, and to kind of get more money or, you know, make a living, they would also invest in slaves themselves. So that's not to say that everyone would do that, but it's to say that slavery was a very lucrative business. So here I've tried to map what I was talking about in terms of pearl diving, which I guess happened mostly in the Persian Gulf, and plantation work. So this is a hypothesis based slide where I tried to collate the infos I gathered from interviews that Kuwaiti, Bahraini, Qatari, and Sharbiya in East Saudi, the music in this region, especially in the seafaring music used on the ships that would go out with the workers for, you know, the pearl diving. So the music they have clubbed in work songs and entertainment songs for entertainment is very comparable in this region. Unlike the UAE and Oman that are kind of comparable to each other, but they're distinct from that upper part of the Gulf. Unlike influence, which probably didn't come through pearl diving, but came through a large population that came for plantation work in South Saudi, so the Asir region where we have Bisha. I'm going to be talking about this. It's an oasis with a lot of like large date plantations or palm tree plantations, and Yemen as well. And altogether, we also have, I'm going to be talking about music used for rituals. So my guess is that that was used by everyone and anyone and everyone from these three different streams. And definitely going through an experience of being enslaved is traumatizing, to say the least. And music has definitely been a way of healing, a way of mourning, a way of dealing with emotions, but also it's been used to call on the spirits, possibly practice some spiritual beliefs by the population that, you know, was forcefully put somewhere else, but also to express resentment against their captivity. And here I'm sharing a couple of instruments. What can I say? I can just say that I'm interested to know about more about the history of all these instruments. Not all of them come from Africa. I believe the Musundo does, for sure. I'm going to be talking about the Tanaka shortly. I've heard Tabal Bahri is from India and the coast as well. But I think something like that's also used in Morocco. So this is just a hint at what kind of drums are used. Right. So now, what do Khaliji rhythms sound like? I'm going to be looking at a few examples that are by far not exhaustive, but that all have this very swingy kind of feel to them. First, I want to start with the Liwa, which is found in Oman, the UAE, but also in Kuwait. And it's part of what is called the incoming arts, or Funun al-Wafid, which is an interesting denomination, I believe. Because it stays something that is designated as this is important, although it's like very widely practiced and played today. So the Liwa is a musical dance, and it's most likely coming from Kenya or Tanzania, and it's performed in areas with large populations that are originally from Africa, especially in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, Oman, Basra, Kuwait. And it includes this Tanaka instrument. So the Tanaka is basically nothing more than a metal box that was used on the ships to transport water after water or oil. And it's crushed on one side, and then it's played with, I guess, metal sticks, and makes like a ding, 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 ding sound. It also features the sodne, which is a wind instrument. I'm not going to compare it to flute because it definitely isn't. And the liwa is used for announcements most of the time. And I want to show you the rhythm. This is not a tanaka, but the sound could be comparable. And before I spend more time on that, I want to want to show you two videos that are filmed like now in real life in Oman and in Liwa, in Kuwait, and that show you how different Liwa is played like in those two different places. And here you have so you see the difference is quite big. And yeah, the Liwa is practiced in a lot of different contexts nowadays. I know we have some experts on this actually on this call, so please chime in afterwards for more details on that. Just in the interest of time, I'm going to keep going and give you another example from Yemen. The Sharh Adani or Adani, I'm still not sure about this, which is based on the African 6-8 polyrhythm cycle, which is also called Swahili or Coastal. And the interesting thing about this rhythm is that it's kind of distantly related, or could be said to be related, to the Brazilian samba, where the loader buca, before the rhythm starts, it has like a pickup, a short note, and then it's the rhythm starts. And that is comparable to the Brazilian surdo pickup. And the surdo is the lowest drum of the percussion group for the Brazilian samba, which I find very interesting. And definitely Yemen was home to the earliest stream of migrations out of Africa, as reaching as far back as 60,000 years ago. So definitely things started way before the Middle Ages. Okay, this is my favorite. So last time I demonstrated what Khubeti is. I am not a percussionist, but I'm still going to do it again. it has, instead of playing 1, 2, 3, 4, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So it has this swing drag in it. And the Khubeti rhythm is very commonly used nowadays, but originally it was used for rituals called zar. And it's interesting to read that was mostly performed by women, and it was said to help exorcise the bad spirit or the jinn from people participating in it. And it was also said to induce trance, which is called instant zar. Possibly this can be linked, because we were talking of people on ships, pearl diving, etc. In one article I read that it might be the jinn possession might be linked to decompression sickness, which is something you get when you dive, of course, without the equipment you use nowadays. You dive up too quickly and there's excess nitrogen in your blood. Now, I don't think that that's the only reason or correlation there. But I think an interesting part as well is that by calling on the spirits and practicing all of this, people could use this as a pretext to say, oh, there's something bigger than you, for instance, owner of, in a slavery context. They could use it as a kind of means to revolt against working or against their owner, and kind of try and scare people or scare the owner by saying that there's spirits in the water where they dive, etc. So an example of the Khubeti rhythm is here. And it's used nowadays a lot in Khaliji pop, actually. So you see what happens here. This is probably very familiar to you if you've heard Khaliji music or Khaliji pop. So I wanted to talk about Raif Bisha. And as I pointed out, the city of Bisha is in South Saudi Arabia, and it's home to a very fertile date plantation. It was a home of many slaves before the abolition happened in Saudi in 1962. And it's performed until today, especially by Bishis of African descent, and it's one of the most successful examples of marriage between African and Khaliji music. The songs are very long. They usually last 15 minutes or more, where men attend and kind of join the chorus, singing the typical ya la la refrain, which I have a short example of. Now, who performs these rhythms today? This list is by far not exhaustive. These are some hints at, for instance, the Bahri Seafaring Music. There's the Kuwaiti Sea Sport Club. We have a music department, definitely Khaliji pop singers, rhythm groups. You can also hear those rhythms at displays of, you know, different traditional performances at culture and heritage festivals. But this is very much, you know, I read a lot of this in books last year, and then this year I did a lot of interviews to see what of this is actually real and still up to date and is still practiced and played. And actually everything, these rhythms are played, as I showed the videos that a percussionist called Mu'ayyad Al-Alawi kindly provided to me. This is still practiced or played at weddings, social gatherings, Eid celebrations. And a very interesting thing I found was female percussionists, which I think this is the only picture of in this presentation. And basically, Tagagat would play especially for... So to start up first, Tagagat is a derogatory term, which literally means someone that hits. Nowadays, they use the term Fananat, and definitely Tara Imad was a great help in kind of getting more infos on this. But today, with the rise of social media, they've become a lot more visible. These are women that make a living out of playing music for instance, weddings. And there's interesting things such as it could be... Tagagat playing music in general. There could be Tagagat that market themselves as Islamic and take off, you know, the musical instruments and just play the duff. And it's really musicians that would hustle. Last year, I read a brief section of a book on that, which I hope I have time for now, which basically talks about... Tagaga's home in southern Riyadh. It's something I found in the book by Lisa Rukavich. And yeah, this is from 2007. I'm going to read it all. Okay. Heard that Tagaga's husband was leaning against an old car when we arrived, not wearing a ghutra, headscarf, smoking, talking with some other men. You know, like people who have no job, nothing to do all the day. When we called him, he came over and unlocked the door and let us in into the home. A large group of tall brown-skinned women dressed in long, colorful cotton dresses greeted us. Once we entered, he locked the door behind us. Creepy. It was so crowded. There was the grandmother, the grandfather, the main Tagagat, and tons of children. One woman stayed completely covered, including a face veil, which is unusual in the home, and another teen girl just stared at us as we sat on the floor. The whole place was basically just a small room with no furniture, just a mattress on the floor, unadorned spoiled plaster walls with cracks. You could smell the reused grease that had seeped into the walls from the tiny kitchen. The band leader reported that she must hide the money that she makes from her husband, because if he finds it, he will take it and spend it on drugs or something for himself. He's trying to save up for her son's education. She's busy. She carries 3 mobile phones so that she can be on call to take all of the wedding bookings. Our wedding music is very much in demand, she told us. But she acknowledges there are problems being a musician, since there is always the fear of being harassed or arrested by religious police who find her profession to be sinful. I know there's been a lot of changes going on in Saudi as well, but I think this short part from 2007 portrayed kind of the social setting of these musicians, and they still exist. And they still, like, only some of them are visible. Some of them have to be more visible. So I wanted to show you some examples of current crossovers between Khaliji rhythms and, for instance, jazz. Tariq Yamani has done not just research work, but also a whole album of Peninsular, where he features different Khaliji rhythms. Right, I think I'm going to end with... a couple of questions that I had. I'm not sure if I'm gonna.
I think let's go. I think Neil, you had a comment on the tambara. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, I just had a small addition, not a real question, but you could almost consider the tambura as a rhythm instrument as well. And the other one I was thinking of is this belt of hooves, which is also used as a rhythm instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that the instruments I showed are not exhaustive. I know the there's type of bass also used in Kuwaiti music, fahar, or it has a different name as well, which is not featured. So there's definitely a lot of different influences.
Rania, I think you had a comment about an Iraqi variation of lewa.
Yeah.
You can unmute yourself with this bass bar if you want.
Sorry, I wasn't unmuted. Yeah, it's called Heywa in Iraq. And it's the same rhythm, but it usually starts with a mawal in a very Iraqi way. If anyone is familiar with how they vocalize the Iraqi mawal, it sounds, I don't want to be sound horrible, but it sounds when a boy gets into puberty and his voice is kind of breaking. So a lot of people say, I don't know if this is Iraqi pride, that a lot of arts in this coastal area. So right now I live in Bahrain. A lot of people would say that a lot of arts come from Basra. But I as well always found Heywa and Lewa to be very African when I listened to it. So maybe this is more a study for someone who is a sociologist. Like, why would people say this? Is this a national pride of like Basra being the center of arts and music? And I don't know. It's just a comment. It's not really. Or maybe if anyone knows, then I'd be interested in.
Thank you. I think it's, yeah, I think definitely I wanted to talk about the perception of African influence on the music, because it's very different. I've talked with some interviewees who, like in Kuwait, for instance, they said, yeah, no problem. You know, when someone, for instance, from the Afro-Khaliji, basically Arturo Farrell, visited to do research there, and he was like, oh, you know, what about the African influence? And they were like, yeah, what, you have Africa, Adamak, and this is Africa in front of you, you know, because some had more like tainted skin. And I found this to be very, like, I couldn't talk of a similar experience from the UAE because I was never in that context, but also it was very hard to get this information. And I want to show you this topic. This article I found, African Identities, Afro-Omani Music, and the Official Construction of a Musical Past.
Do we want to, Bede, did you have a comment about Zaar?
Actually, Alexandra, this is such a great presentation. I think you've really managed to cover like a good body of like people to get more interested, because in Bahrain, for example, 90% of our music comes from African roots. And we even still have some music that is practiced within the kind of slave community, like the previous slave community, that is still sung in Swahili.
Yeah.
In Bahrain. So that was very interesting. And the very small 10% comes from war music and tribe between Saudi and kind of, or the Shibh al-Jazeera before. But Zaar is actually banned in a lot of countries, and now they mask them as like Samranites in Bahrain, or even in Kuwait, or even in Saudi. And there has been raids in the past 10, 20 years where the minute they switch into Zaar, there is always cops coming in, because it's considered very sacrilegious, and it's very black and dark magic and has to do with it. The Lewa also includes a lot of bagpipes that is traditionally made with sheep skin, specifically sheep skin. I don't know why that in specific, I'm sure someone would be able to figure out. This is such a fantastic presentation, and the percussion, I'm a very big fan of Khalij music. I come from Bahrain, and I definitely identify with the roots of it. So just a big thank you for this. It was such a fantastic presentation.
Thank you so much. Yeah, also in this, I talked to different people, and I was like, oh, what about the Zaar? Is it still practiced? Is it illegal? So I'm not sure. I think in some places it's not fully legal, and other places it's just what they said, is basically it's hard to access. It's a specific community, possibly descendant of, you know, Africans practicing it, and but it still exists.
Neil, I think you wrote an hour is too short. I agree, it's too short. But in the spirit of at least letting the people who have to go, go, I'm just going to take one more.
I don't think I really had a question. It was more just a comment about where Bahri music is performed and practiced in Kuwait. The Kuwait Youth Sport Club teaches young boys some of the repertoire, but it's really practiced still traditionally by well-known families, Ma'youf Mjalli, who I belong to, Bin Hussein Al-Mas and Amiri. So these are really easy to find ensembles in Kuwait. And you know, Tambura, just one small historical fact, I mean, it travels up the Nile from Lake Victoria over to the Arabian Peninsula and North Africa as well. You know, one of the reasons, going back just another comment about why, about the influence of Basra. You know, a lot of the trade routes that span from Western India to Northeast Africa funneled into Basra, into Baghdad. And one of the reasons why the music is so cosmopolitan, is so hybrid, is because of trade. Slavery plays a role in that, certainly. But, you know, most of the lyrical content of Kuwaiti Bahri music uses Mweli, which comes from Mawad, which comes from Iraq, or the Zahiriya, which is also an Iraqi poetic form. So it's really easy to say the Gulf, but what this topic is really about is the Indian Ocean civilization trade routes. And that is a huge, huge topic that is so multi-layered, and it's so easy to say, to be reductive about this. And I think it's really dangerous too, because it doesn't speak to the many layers and doesn't really give voice to all the civilizations involved outside of political correctness, whatever. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I definitely think that it goes way beyond just the influence I talked about. It's what I found the most kind of important or enigmatic in terms of the rhythmical side, but definitely the melodies, the instruments, there's huge influences from India and from, I guess, all the different trade routes. So I think I put some of those questions, if I can go back, put some of the questions here. What about the influence and lyrics? What about, I had someone reach out to me with examples of Bandari music from South Iran, or from the other side of the Gulf. And that had this similar like swing drag. So I think the influences are really, as you said, multi-layered. And this is just a short snippet on rhythm.
Thanks, Ghazi, for that comment. I mean, I think the relationship between the Gulf and sort of the Indian subcontinent and those trade routes is often sort of relegated, actually, and relatively unexplored. And I think it's very important for us to kind of explore that a little bit more.
Thank you. I just wanted to say quickly, I copied a link to a playlist I started. It's not exhaustive, by far not. On different crossovers with Khaliji rhythms featured in them. So it's over here. It's also linked in my slides. If you want to listen to some more.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks. Thank you for joining.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We have new episodes coming every single week. Make sure you follow us on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. You can find us at afikra.com for information about all upcoming events. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks a lot. See you next time, and stay curious.